My name is Jill Wolf. I am 37 years old. Today is June 1st, 2017. I am at the Chicago Cultural Center, and my relationship to my partner is friend and fellow advocate.
Hello, my name is Larry Holmes. I'm 63 years old. Today is June the 1st, 2017. I'm in Chicago. I'm sitting among friends.
My name is Dante Williams. I am 36 years old. Today's date is June 1st, 2017. I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center in Chicago, Illinois. And I am here with my friends and fellow advocates.
Larry, I am so excited to be sitting in front of you. 9 months ago, about this time, I saw a picture of a handsome man with a bald head and some really, really fascinating eyes sitting, staring at me. And it was an article about Hep C. And it was about how people couldn't get access because of certain reasons. And it pictured you. And I'm sitting in front of you right now. So I'm real, real excited about that. I'm curious if you knew the day that you shared the story, or maybe the reporters came in and videoed you, because you're on video as well. I'm curious if you know the impact that you made that day of being on the trip.
I had no idea I made an impact, but I did get my medicine a couple of months later. So they called me and told me I had been, I was eligible.
Tell me first, why couldn't you get, what do you mean you couldn't get your medicine? Like, what's going on here?
Well, the last time I mentioned this, they didn't put it in there, but I was at the clinic and everyone with medical cards and they treated everyone like they were peasants, poor people. Mm. I mentioned the governor, and public aid refused to medicate us. And I saw this guy. He was almost dying. They medicated him. So I thought, well, I got to be almost dead before I get the medication. And I spoke to a couple of people, and I got to speak to the photographer, and I made a statement, and they printed it. A couple of months later, I got the medicine. I'm 12%. I'm almost cured.
Yeah.
Well, 12 minus. I am cured.
You're 12 weeks post-treatment.
Right, and that was 3 months ago. I'm finished with my medicine. Mm-hmm. Just waiting to go in and get the results.
Tell me about this medicine. What is it? What did it mean to you to get or not get this medicine?
Well, first of all, it's for 30 days. It's $40,000 a bottle. They had to give me 3 bottles. Mm-hmm. There's no way I could have afforded that. And I'm really grateful for you guys give me an opportunity to speak and to be able to get my medicine.
Yeah. Your medicine for what? Tell me what this is
hepatitis
all about.
Hepatitis C.
And today you're cured of hepatitis C. You don't
Correct.
Have it today.
It's a liver disease.
Yeah.
And it makes you, well, some of the symptoms are just, you don't feel good most of the time and you don't have strength. Mm-hmm. And I seem to have strength today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different than it was like 3 months ago, maybe?
Oh, much better.
Could you say a little bit more? What's different?
I'm different.
Hmm.
The medicine did what it's supposed to do, and I get around a lot better. I'm 63, but got a little more pep.
Yeah. So, Larry, I have one of the coolest jobs in the world. I actually get to work in the issue of hepatitis C, to find ways to cure people and get people access or educate people or talk with people like you about Hep C and whatnot. And I'm curious if you know, there's a lot of Larry Holmes out there that know that they have Hep C but can't get access. And then there's a whole lot of Larry Holmes that have Hep C and don't know. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot of people are going to die and don't even know why they're dying. And I'm spreading the word. There's a couple of trucks around my neighborhood that do the testing, which I was going to them next because I wanted to be cured. Mm-hmm. So I found the truck. I have a brother that had it. He has it. He's getting treated through the truck because it's free. And they take your blood on the truck. And if you have it, then they send you to where you need to go mm-hmm. to get taken care of.
Well, and even, you know, the situation for you that came up is you were somewhere that you were supposed to go. You were seeing a doctor and you were in a clinic, but you couldn't get the medication, even though you were doing what you were supposed to do.
That clinic doesn't accept medical cards, county care, or any of that. They do now.
What do you think now? I see a big smile on your face.
I think I had a lot to do with that.
I think you're right.
And you guys posted my interview and someone saw it.
So let's talk a little bit. The impact of the interview in September, one of the impacts was you got your medication that you couldn't get before, right?
Correct.
Do you know, beyond you and beyond your smiling liver today, do you know what other impacts maybe have happened because of that?
Yes, everyone comes to the clinic now, gets the medicine.
Not everyone, but way more people than before.
Just about.
So can you tell me some of the things that went through your head before that reporter or photographer came over? I think it was at your house that they did that, right?
Correct.
What was going through your head before they came and you're about to sort of go live with hepatitis C?
The fact that I almost got to be dead to get the medicine, first of all, was a bad experience for me. And by me being poor, the rich, the middle class, can get this medicine, but the poor people can't. And that's the whole thing about this Obamacare that's going on now. Mm. The rich people don't want to see the poor people get well. Mm. They treat us like peasants. Last time I did the interview, they didn't put peasants in there. And I wanted to make sure that the people listening know that they really do treat us like peasants mm. because we don't have money. But we are human also.
Yeah.
And everyone needs help.
Yeah. And so what do you think are things that we can do? I mean, it had to take a certain amount of bravery of you to be able to come forward, but also maybe some anger. I mean, I wasn't the one who was told I couldn't get the medication, and I was angry. So what, being treated like a peasant, being told that you're poor and you can't get health or whatever, I mean, tell me what that does inside you.
I was angry, but I've learned I don't have the luxury to be angry anymore because it only makes you do stuff you shouldn't. Hmm. So I've learned a new way, and I pray a lot now about situations. So I gave this situation to God, and he always show up.
Yeah, and God certainly plays a role, but at least the article I read or the video I saw, it wasn't God sitting there talking. It was Larry Holmes sitting there talking, and that takes a whole other kind of bravery that, God or not.
God works through people. Mm. And he brought the interview. He brought you, and he brought me. He brought us all together to make this happen. It just didn't happen. I believe God made this happen.
So now we're together. And so now what?
We're going to continue to let people know that there's help out here. And I don't have a problem with working with you guys.
So there's a lot of other people that maybe know or maybe don't know that there's a problem. But I would imagine a lot of those other people are maybe angry, too, that they feel like they're being treated like peasants or that they can't get medication or something. But they don't have the maybe belief or prayer time or whatever it is that Larry Holmes has. What do we do with those individuals who maybe can't speak up?
We're reaching out to them now, aren't we?
I hope so.
I hope they're listening for their sakes.
So what do you think we can do here together? You know, we're different people, and you know, we have a similar mission, I think. How do you think we might be able to capitalize on that?
Well, like I said, it's a truck in my neighborhood.
Okay.
That does testing, but everyone don't know about the truck and what the truck does. And I think maybe we can go over and speak to the neighborhood.
Does the community, do you think people in the community know about the truck that comes there?
They know about the truck, but people kind of look down on the truck because it's a truck for passing out needles for addicts. Mm-hmm. To try to keep them from getting AIDS, mm-hmm. clean needles. So they do a swap. You turn your old needles in for new ones. Mm-hmm. They give you cotton and mm-hmm. cookers and alcohol pads, mm-hmm. pamphlets. And they try to encourage the people to go to meetings and stop using. But the average addict will not use until he's ready. Mm. But the average addict has hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. And we need to speak to him.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about at least what you're willing to share in terms of your journey. And maybe how, you know, you say not everyone who uses drugs, you know, they have to hit a time where they're ready, right, to either make a change or do something different.
Okay. I've been clean for 20 years. Thank God.
That's awesome.
And before that, I was an addict, and I used to live and lived to use.
Mm-hmm. What was your drug of choice?
Drugs.
Drug, didn't matter what, right?
Okay, I was a kid and I drank alcohol. Mm-hmm. I smoked weed. I sniffed glue. The disease of addiction, it progresses. So you always want more and you always want to get higher. So I came from the weed to the cocaine and heroin. And then this crack came out. And I stopped doing everything, just did crack. Because mm-hmm. it kind of cracked me up. It was designed for you not to be able to stop.
Right.
So I'm a miracle sitting here in front of you. Mm. And I had some help through my judge.
What do you mean?
I was in court facing some charges, and I told the judge I was an addict, and he told me that he would give me 12 years in the penitentiary. Well, I had a choice. I could go to the drug program. So I took the drug program. So now we got 8 years more than the 12. I thanked that judge the last time I saw him. I thanked him for helping me save my life.
What year was that? Do you remember about?
97.
Hmm. Where did you go, sir, do treatment?
HRDI. Mm-hmm. 63rd in Halsted. I went to an inpatient.
Mm-hmm. At HRDI?
Yes, on 18 and 11th. They have closed it down. They're closing down all the treatment centers. They're taking the money from the treatment centers. So if you don't have insurance, you might be out of luck.
Even if you do have insurance.
I got lucky, and it was back then, and I did the treatment. My son's mother died, and I became a single parent. Mm. I finished treatment. I made meetings. I got a job. Things are looking pretty good. All the way up until recently, I lost my job. But I still cut hair, and it helps make ends meet.
Yeah.
And my son is 27 now, so I have two 15-year-old girls.
Wow.
I'm a proud dad, and it's going to be okay, though.
Yeah, it is okay.
Because I might get to see my grandkids now. Mm-hmm. I got the medication.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible.
Yes.
It's a lot of work that you did to do that. You should be very proud of yourself.
I am.
Very good. You told me when you were a kid, you know, you started maybe drinking, smoking weed, sniffing glue. Do you remember those times? Like, do you remember being... How old would you say you were at that time? Let me ask that.
Oh, I used to do the parties.
We're talking like high school, kind of teenager?
No, I was maybe 12. Mm-hmm. I used to wash dishes and my dad had his alcohol up on the refrigerator and I used to drink his gin. By the time I finished washing dishes, I drank all the gin and made me throw up. Mm. But that didn't make me stop drinking. Mm-hmm. I liked it the way it made me feel. Mm-hmm.
Can you describe that? At 12, do you remember what it was that you were looking to feel or why maybe you were drinking?
Well, it gives you a burn in your stomach. And it's, I don't understand it either. Something that makes you throw up and you go back and do it again anyway. And you know the consequences. But after a while, you stop throwing up. Mm-hmm. Then you look for the effect. And the effect is getting high. Mm-hmm. And I liked it getting high.
What else was going on at 12 years old in your family?
I lived in a normal family. My mom and dad went to work. I lived in Inglewood. It's nothing like it is now. Mm-hmm. I was a good kid, long as my mom could see me. Had girlfriends, friends.
You mean your mom couldn't see you?
When my mom couldn't see me, then I was me.
Which was?
Well, I did what little boys do. Go out and act out. Mm-hmm. And play baseball and curse and smoke cigarettes. Stuff like that.
And when you were 12 and started drinking and doing other drugs, were some of your friends also doing that?
My so-called peers.
Yeah.
Yeah, we pushed each other mm-hmm. to, let's try this, let's try that. And that was a form of, like, being cool. Mm-hmm.
You still see any of those peers today?
Yes, I see quite a few. And they, well, this thing called anonymity, so I still see them.
Yeah.
And they hang out where I hang out.
And they go to meetings, maybe, where they're able to talk about things and not exactly. worried about their identity being
exactly
revealed.
So when we see each other, we always greet and we're always glad to see each other because there's not very many of us left because most of my friends are dead or in the penitentiary.
Wow. And I would imagine then if a lot of those individuals, peers or friends, whichever they are or were, maybe also had hepatitis C or have hepatitis C.
No doubt. Majority of them, we share about hepatitis C. And most of my friends that I associate with know I've taken the medicine. And the guy I just talked to on the phone is getting his hair with. Cut. He's almost finished taking his because I'm his barber and I communicate and he has insurance. So he had no problem getting the medicine. Just hearing me talk about it made him go and get tested.
That's powerful.
So my barber chair, I do a, you know, you just say you talk, the barber talks a lot. Well, I do. I share and people share with me.
Yeah. And so are some of the people, whether people have sat in your barber chair or maybe friends in meetings, are some of them not able to get the medication as well?
Not those guys, because they know where to go because I told them. Like I said, my brother, he went to
the truck.
To the truck, and he's in the process of getting his medicine. Mm-hmm.
And that truck, I think that's it's Chicago Recovery Alliance.
Yes.
That,
68 in Halsted.
That's one of their
locations. Right on the corner. Well, that's
where they go in your neighborhood.
Yeah, 12 o'clock every Saturday. For the last 20 years, they're always there.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Did you just recently learn about the truck, or have you known about it for
20 years?
So you knew about it 20 years ago.
Right.
Okay.
And I always stop by the truck and say hello every once in a while. And maybe get me some alcohol pads.
Mm-hmm. For your barber chair?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. Another place to educate is how to prevent hepatitis C transmission from when you cut people's hair, right? And so it's a way
exactly.
to show how you're cleaning your supplies and able to keep everyone safe.
Yes. Well, I have a spray mm-hmm. for my clippers. Mm-hmm.
What do
and
you
sanitizers?
Yeah, what has anything surprised you? I guess I'm just thinking of you in your barber chair, standing behind someone, maybe a guy your age, or maybe older or younger, and you talk to him about Hep C. Curious if there's anything that surprised you that people that you've worked with, friends with, peers with, that you've associated with, what they've said or some of their thoughts about Hep C, right or wrong. I'm curious if anything surprises you.
No surprises, because people from my age is on TV telling you that you may not even use the needle, but just the possibility you have Hep C because you were born back in the 60s, early 50s in the 60s. So a lot of people have it, don't even know it. You get it from tattoos. Or it's a lot of different ways to get it.
A lot of different ways.
Sex also.
Not so much with sex, but a little bit with sex. Certainly a small risk, but it's certainly something that would get someone to say, ooh, really? Let me get tested.
True.
Right? Where would you like to see, you know, it was 9 months ago that I saw your picture on the newspaper in the Trib. So it took us, we've talked on the phone before, but it took us 9 months to see each other, okay? Let's project, and in that 9 months, when it started, you couldn't get your meds. You were able to get your meds. 3 bottles worth of meds that cost $40,000 each. You took them. They worked. Your liver's smiling and you're cured. Okay? So I would like to make a date with you 9 months from now. And I'm going to ask you to fantasize for me for a bit about in 9 months, what would you like to see for yourself, for our relationship together, as it relates to continuing to do what you do well?
Well, I would like to see a lot of more people get cured through you and my help. And don't forget to mention Dante.
Oh, I can never forget Dante.
Dante is, he's been your in-between man. He's taking me to lunch. He does. He calls me on a regular basis. He keeps up with me.
He keeps up with me, too.
Okay. I would just like to help.
Yeah.
I would like to help. To the best of my ability, see anyone that has hepatitis C get cured. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to see every time I help somebody, I help me.
That's right.
So it's all about helping somebody because someone did help me. It's called Each One Teach One. Mm. So I'm just willing.
I'm willing too. Right there with you. And I guess I'll ask you to be creative and think about, you know, you're in a lot of different places, be it in your meetings. Obviously, there's some boundaries around that. But if there's ever ways that me or Ann Dante can help with getting your message out there and being something that you can deliver in the rooms or in your barber chair or in your community, I could keep going. Chicago and the state. And I mean, there's a whole lot of work to be done. You've got a lot to say. I think some people might want to listen to what you've got to say. So I hope you'll stay in touch and kind of keep those creative juices flowing of how we can continue to get this message out.
That's a big 10-4.
Larry, is there anything that you want to share with me or questions that you have or things you'd want to share?
No, you've done a great job all through the whole flick. I would say you're pretty. I've been, you know, I talked to you on the phone 9 months ago. I never thought I would see a pretty lady as you are.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm blushing.
So I was shocked when I was shocked when I came in.
I do try to shock people with my looks as much as possible. That's why, you know, Dante and I don't work in the same office. We have to work apart because I'd shock them too much, really, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, just okay. Just I do some corny jokes. It's just what keeps me smiling, I guess. Dante, anything you can think of or questions you have with our buddy here who's, you know, relationship just starting? Keep going.
You know, I don't have any questions. I think you all had a wonderful interview, and I think it covered a lot of bases. One thing that I can say is that I'm looking forward to picking up and continuing the work that we're doing with Larry and seeing how we can spread this message further out in the community and the world itself.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that fires me up, Larry, and I'm not a statistics person by any means. I'm a social worker. I'm an artist. I'm a musician. That stuff doesn't ring to me. But what rings to me is this. Okay, I look at you. And I think you say you're 63, right?
Yes.
A 63-year-old black man. Okay, here's what I can tell you. 1 in 10 black men in your age range have Hep C. 1 in 10. 10%. That's huge. Okay, of that 10%, about 50% of them don't know that they have Hep C. And when we look at what's going on in our world with addiction, you know, you talk about hippies and stuff like that, right? There's still a lot of hippies around. Young, old, you name it. And a lot of drug use happening. Some people have addiction. Some people don't. But the fact is that a lot of people are unnecessarily going to die from a disease that we could cure. And that makes me angry. And maybe it's a luxury. It was really interesting when you said earlier, you have a luxury. Being angry is a luxury. I guess I have a luxury to be angry because I see you and I just see opportunity, and I just get really excited because how can we together save this world of these men that don't know what's going on and who have families who are going to be impacted as well?
Well, we can't save the world, but we can save a few. So we'll get out there and do the best we can. That's all we can do.
I'll keep doing that. You keep talking? Keep talking to your people?
I got you.
Send them our way when, you know, it's time for us to get involved. I'll bring you down to Springfield with me. Will you come?
What's the possibility? Okay. If I make it my business not to go out of town when my daughters are into whatever they're into because I'm a great dad.
Yeah.
But if I can get away, sure.
I bet your daughter's got something to say about their dad getting access to a cure.
Well, my daughters don't know about me getting the cure because they never knew I had it.
Hmm. Tell me about that.
See, when I had my daughters, I was an addict. Well, I'll always be an addict, but I'm a recovering addict now. So I wasn't in my addiction when I had my daughters, so they didn't see any of that.
Yes.
All they see is
a dad who goes to meetings and is a good dad.
Right. They see me at the schools,
yeah,
at church, and at the beach and places where dads need to be with their daughters.
And did they know that before they were born and years before that they were born that you were using drugs?
Okay, they're meeting babies. They've been to meetings on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. They won't go with me now anymore because they're 15. They don't want to go nowhere with me. But when they were young, they loved to go with dad, and dad always go to meetings. So they went, and then they met the other kids at the meetings, and they always intertwine, and they had a lot of fun, and they know the stories. And my daughter can quote some of the book when she call herself trying to get me. She can, Dad, I know what part I played in it and all that old kind of stuff. You know, that comes out the literature. So
it works.
Yeah, she tried to get sick. But, so my kids know about drugs.
Yeah.
They know drugs are no good for you. And my 27-year-old, he works every day. His pants is pulled up. He has a clean haircut. He's been on his job 7 years. And he's a good dad also. So I'm rubbing off
a little bit. Sounds like you broke some serious cycles that did not get passed on to your kids.
Broke the curse.
Amen. That's fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit more? You know, you said that your girls would go to meetings with you, and so being able to talk about drug use and addiction was open and something that, you know, like they know the book, right?
Well, it was something normal.
Something normal to them. Right. Tell me about then, as a father, the decision to not talk about Hep C and not talk about sort of a disease that came from having used drugs.
It's like my daughter said, Dad, I talk to my daughters all the time, and I let them know I want to live long because I want to see my grandkids. Okay, so she said, Dad, if you don't stop smoking, you're not going to see my grandkids. So I don't want to inflict the thought in her mind that Hep is going to kill me, that I won't see my grandkids. So it's, you know, some stuff like call too much information for kids. Mm-hmm. If I had cancer right now, I would not tell my kids because it would only make them sad. Mm. Same thing with Hep. It's a killer. And if I hadn't got cured, it's no telling when I would end up dead. So that's stuff you don't talk. I talk to my wife about it, but not to the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like a decision as a parent, you know, to really, that was a choice that you made to be conscious of what they can handle and not handle.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness we don't have to worry about your liver progressing even further to get liver cancer. Right? I mean, that's a great thing.
My liver is in pretty good shape.
How's the smoking, not smoking going?
I haven't smoked in 12 years.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Your liver's smiling about that, too.
Yes. I'm save a lot of money, too.
Truth. Especially with the increased cost of cigarettes these days, huh?
Exactly.
It's good. Larry, I can't think of much more to really ask. I feel really grateful and humble to be sitting here with you. And I look forward to seeing what we create together and getting some men or people or communities into your barber chair as we talk about hair and hepatitis or something.
I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Look forward to seeing you and talking to you and helping someone else in the future.
I guess the only other thing I'd say is maybe next time I see you, I can print out the picture of you from the newspaper. You can sign it. I can get your autograph. And add it to, like, you know, scrapbook, because I do want to really emphasize the ripple effect of you coming forward.
That's what I was going to ask you for your autograph.
We'll trade. I'm not in the newspaper, though. My picture's not in the newspaper. Maybe we could be in the newspaper together.
That's okay. You're a pretty girl.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.